The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. The Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee, otherwise known as VINGOC, held a seminar recently to review the 2020 World Drug Report from the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. We're going to hear portions of that webinar right now. Here's Dr. Thomas Pichman, drug research expert with the UNODC.
So we start out with what is the drug users. Drug users, most of the drug users are cannabis, followed by opioids, then the amphetamines, and at similar levels, ecstasy and cocaine. In terms of prevalence rates, we speak about close to 4% having used cannabis at least once. So this includes a person who has used one joint in the last year, and including those who smoke daily. But that's around 4% of the population. Then we have the opioids, 1.2%, which includes the opiates. The opiates is the opium, morphine, and the heroin. And the wider range, the wider, broader area is the opioids, 1.2%, which is synthetic opioids also included. Then you have the amphetamines, around 0.6%. You have the ecstasy, 0.4%, and the cocaine, 0.4%. Now, in overall terms of drug use, we have our best estimates, around 269 million people have taken at least once a drug in the last year, equivalent to 5.4% of the total population, 15 to 64. But if you look at the problem drug users, which nowadays we're called the people suffering from drug use disorders, we speak about 36 million people who are suffering from such problems. So the real problem is this order of magnitude, and the order of magnitude is 0.7% of the population, 15 to 64. And this is clearly where the biggest focus is and the biggest focus should be. In terms of how have been the trends, overall you see in terms of prevalence rates, yes, you see changes, but they are not really important over the last decade, around 5%. The best estimate is now 5.4%, but you see the big error margin. So honestly, based on this, you cannot say much about the trends. It seems to be an increase, but nothing dramatic. And the same applies to the problem drug users. And this is now in the terms of the number of people there, because the population has increased. You see also, it seems that the number of people who have used drugs has increased. Why I say it seems? Because the error margins are very big, and the estimates actually do not allow for making a firm statement, even so personally, and using at other data we look at, we think it has increased, but the data as such only tells us that the big error margins around these estimates, and a firm statement you cannot do at the moment. Another issue is the disability, the DALIS, disability adjusted life years lost. And here we speak about 40 million lost on average a year, and 585,000 people dying from drugs. Now, is this much? Is this little? When you speak now about the COVID crisis, when we launched the World Drug Report, there was still around 400,000 people died from COVID. Now it's 650,000 people. So now we are slightly above. At the time it was launched, it was slightly below that numbers. We see all the big story and the crisis we have because of COVID, but basically nobody speaks about the every year crisis we have on drugs. Around 585,000 people. This was the years for 2017. Now, having said this, put it into comparison. The deaths related to tobacco, 8.1 million, alcohol, 2.8 million. So the drugs account for 5% of all deaths linked to the deaths of psychoactive substances. When it comes to the DALIS, we have tobacco, 213 million years, alcohol, 108 million years. So drugs are 12%. Of all DALIS. It's important, but we still have to remember legal substances, alcohol and drugs, tobacco and alcohol cause much more of a harm than drugs at the global level. Now, when we look for what are the substances what people are dying of, or people, the DALIS, the life years lost, there's clearly one substance, group of substances which dominates, and that's the opioids. Opioids dominate this, so around half of all DALIs at the global level lost, half of all life years lost are due to the opioids. So our focus clearly in terms of harm has to be and should remain on the opioids. Now, the opioid crisis, we look at the United States. We had basically three waves. We had an original wave of an opioid overdose crisis. Then we had a second wave when we had heroin overdose and people dying from heroin because people shifted from the pharmaceutical opioids into heroin. And we have a third wave of the last few years, which has basically the shifting to synthetic opioids, particularly to fentanyls. Fentanyls mixing, and you see, while overall opioids have been rather stable, the pharmaceutical opioids the last few years have been stable. Heroin also has been, in the United States, starting to stabilize. And oral opioids has even marginally declined in 2018. There was an ongoing increase in the synthetic opioids, and particularly it's the fentanyls which have been responsible for this. Here we see the seizures. The seizures are particularly in North America, and you see the big increase in seizures in the United States, and the second one is then Mexico, far less is Canada. But also in Europe, the trend, the overall trend has been upwards over the last couple of years. Nonetheless, when we take now the seizures 2014-2018, we see that 98.9% of the fentanyl seizures were in North America and 0.6% in Europe. So the problem of the fentanyls is still a North American problem. Even so, also in Europe, we see an upward trend over the last couple of years. In terms of why is it? Why is this the case? Here we have for the North America, the heroin profits, the production costs, and the retail. So you, of course, well, you know, you make a lot of money once you buy heroin and you sell heroin. But if you compare this to the fentanyl, it's almost peanuts. Production costs of fentanyl is lower than of heroin, and the retail, what you can get from the market, is much higher. So the overall profit in the system is much higher. So there's a big interest from trafficking groups to shift away from the heroin into fentanyl because it's there where you make the money. And the last, so the fentanyl crisis, what we had in North America, was not a demand driven crisis, it was a supply driven crisis. It was a decision by the traffickers to move into fentanyl to make the profits there. And what why is fentanyl so problematic? Fentanyl as such is 50 to 100 times more potent than heroin. And they have some of the fentanyls, like carfentanyl, 10,000 times more potent than heroin. This means a small mistake can be deadly. A small mistake can be deadly. And people who produce these fentanyls are not, it's not the chemical industry, it's not the pharmaceutical industry, it's individuals who very often have very limited information, limited abilities to work on these products, and thus the risk of dying from fentanyls, from wrong mixtures of fentanyls is extremely high. In parallel, we have the problem of the tramadol in Africa, particularly Western Africa and in Northern Africa. We see also that here the issue is, again, particularly a supply-driven issue because the prices of tramadol have been much lower than of other opioids, or particularly much lower than the prices for heroin. There have been some good news. Tramadol got under national control in India, which used to be the main supplier of tramadol in 2018. As a consequence, there was less of the big shipments to Africa. This was the good news. The bad news was that immediately other substances were sold as tramadol on African soil, and sometimes which were also dangerous in creating additional problems. And the underlying problems, what we say in a second, is why are people so much into tramadol? It's very often because the access for people who need it, opioids, just isn't there. There's a big problem of access to pharmaceutical opioids for people who need it, which is not there in Africa. And I come back to this in a minute. So overall, what we can say, we have too little and too much of the pharmaceutical opioids for medical purposes. Too little in the developing countries and too much in a number of the developed countries. So 12% of the global population has access to 90% of the global pharmaceutical opioids. This is a very uneven distribution. We see where it's high. It's high in North America, extremely high. It's high in Western Europe. It's high in Australia and New Zealand. And everything else in the world is clearly below the global average, and it's particularly low in Africa and particularly low in South Asia. And it's very clear people also die there. People suffer from pain in those areas, and they don't get the medical medication, the pharmaceutical opioids, which they would need. In terms of the trends, we see actually about something positive. Initially, you see the big increase here in North America of the opioids, and then the last 3 years, a clear decline. It's positive. Still, it's clearly above the average, but the trend as such seems to be positive. For Europe and Australia, you see an increase and rather stabilization thereafter. For developing countries, for a number of those, you see an increase, which actually, again, is positive. Having said this, we still have areas like South Asia, Africa, but also Central Asia, where the per capita consumption is extremely low and clearly far too low, and we even don't see the increase which would be needed. So people who would need the preparations to suffering from pain don't get this medication. Now, we analyze also in the World Drug Report the reasons for this. I don't want to go into it, but a number of legal regulatory systems, supply management problems, healthcare system providers, all face problems and are not properly there to so that the people who would need the drugs actually get the drugs. Next problem is just the overall view. We go to individual drugs, global seizures, now look for the opiates. Here, the classical trafficking is from Afghanistan along the Balkan route. You have trafficking from Myanmar to China, but also to Australia. And you have trafficking in the Americas from Mexico and to much lesser extent, Colombia to North America, to the United States. So it's really three quite separate markets, which don't have much in common. They're in parallel. They're not in addition, they're in parallel. This has been the case for many years, and this continues to be basically the case. In case of cocaine, there's only one production area. This is South America, the Andean region. The biggest shipments continue to be from Colombia to Central America and then onwards to the United States. But we have also ongoing shipments to Europe, either directly or via Africa. And again, you see errors going to many other parts. So we have a proliferation of drug trafficking routes. We have seen this over the last couple of years, till the big amounts are to North America and to Western Europe. Even the other markets are increasing. The biggest shipments are still these two main markets. And of course, South America itself is a big market, notably Brazil. When it comes to the ATS, amphetamine type stimulants, we see the biggest seizures continue to be methamphetamine, followed by amphetamine. In terms of cannabis, the biggest seizures is cannabis herb, followed by cannabis resin. Now, in terms of production, what we see here has been basically an upward trend. Even so, for the last couple of years, we've seen some positive signs. In Afghanistan, the area under cultivation has declined by 20% in 2018 and by 38% in 2019. So it's something positive. Why is it not changed into production, or not so much into production changes? Simply because in the previous years, we had very bad years of yields in Afghanistan. These years, the yield has normalized, come back to normal levels, and thus we don't see the impact on the production side. Even so, the area under cultivation has strongly declined. In Myanmar, we also see a decline in the area under cultivation in the last 3 years. And also even for Mexico, we have data for 2016-17 and 17-18. Also there we see a decline. So there are some positive signs on the opiate side. Nonetheless, the opiate level of production is extremely high. And so there is no shortage on the market, just the opposite. The stocks are still full, and so the market continues to be completely supplied by opiates, also by heroin. In terms of what is the importance, we see over average production of opium continues to be dominated in Afghanistan, 84%. followed by Myanmar, 7%, and then Mexico, around 6% of the total.
You're listening to a presentation by Dr. Thomas Peachman, a drug research expert with the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. He's speaking on UNODC's 2020 World Drug Report, which was issued on June 26th. We'll have more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. This webinar was sponsored by the Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee. They're the coordinating body for NGOs working on drug control-related policies at the UN offices in Vienna. In a sense, they're the voice of civil society there in Vienna. Some UN agencies have done a better job of incorporating civil society input than others. The UNODC, the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, and the International Narcotics Control Board are some of the worst. Loyal listeners will recall that I have complained repeatedly over the years about the opacity of drug policy discussions at the international level, the UN office in Vienna's annual difficulties in streaming their live meetings, their unwillingness to archive and make public the recordings of their plenary sessions. So I suppose it's not surprising that UNODC, CND, and the INCB were so resistant for so long in accepting civil society as partners in policy making. The International Drug Policy Consortium, the Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee, and the New York Non-Governmental Organizing Committee are really to be commended for the exceptional progress that's been made over the last 12 or 13 years. To say that international policy discussions move slowly is an understatement. A glacier looks like Usain Bolt in comparison. Hopefully, by continuing to shine light on their discussions, we can force the CND, the INCB, and the UNODC to open up even more. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. And now let's get back to Dr. Thomas Peachman, drug research expert with the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, and his review of the 2020 World Drug Report.
When we look to cocaine, we have seen actually a record high in terms of production in 2018. Having said this, we also have some good news. The good news is in 2018, for the first time, there has been a small decline of the area under cultivation in Colombia. In 2019, even a stronger decline. So something positive in Colombia to see. For Peru, unfortunately, we don't have new data. And for Bolivia, in 2018, we had a small decline of 6%. In 2017, the last year where we had comparable data, 70% of the area under cultivation was Colombia, 20% Peru, and 10% Bolivia. In terms of ATS market, we've seen a massive expansion of the market. ATS seizures increased fourfold over the 2009-2018 period. And mass seizures, which is the dominant seizures, we see the in blue or slightly green, they even increased sevenfold from 2009-2018. So the biggest increase on the ATS markets was methamphetamine. Here was the most important expansion. But we also looked at the different regions, and there we see a very different pattern. While amphetamine continues to be the main ATS in Europe, we see North America, it's methamphetamine. The same applies to Southeast Asia and so on. So look for the regions. It's a very different pattern from region to region. NPS, we have 282 substances under international control, but we have some 950 substances which were identified at the markets globally. So in the last couple of years, we've seen a clear increase in the number of identified NPS. So there are three times as many substances which are not under international control than substances that are under national control. So on the NPS, this is something to keep in your head, in your mind. At the same time, the market is very in a state of flux. So the substances come in and substances come out. So on average, we had around 500 substances newly emerging every year on the market, but many substances disappear and other substances come back to the market. We also see one problem is really the harmful opioids which has come onto the market. This is the particularly the fentanyl analogs. They are the most problematic NPS what we are seeing, and those numbers have increased in recent years. At the same time, we have seen that countries who have then putting the psychoactive substance, the NPS, under national law, there seems to have been a containment effect, at least in some countries. If we look at the example of here first of the UK, you see methadone was controlled in the early 2010s, 2011, and you see a massive decline in the amounts methadone you find on the market. Also, NPS in general, there was an NPS law in the UK, and since then we have seen a clear decline in the overall numbers of people who used NPS in the UK. Having said this, there are also some exceptions. So, for instance, ketamine has again increased in recent years. Not the same everything, but overall we see there has been a positive effect. The same now we see for 12th grade students in the United States. We see synthetic cannabinoids. Once they have been put under control, their use has declined. The same applies to ketamine and to casinones in the U.S., a clear decline in the use over the last couple of years. And this is something positive because these substances, particularly casinones, are really dangerous and can be very dangerous. We also see an interesting example of a comparison of Austria and Germany. Both countries speak the same language. They had a similar drug problem. But in terms of NPS, Austria introduced NPS legislation first in 2008 and later in 2012. And in Germany, it took a little more time. Only in 2016, the NPS legislation was introduced. And we see Austria in 2015, 0.1% of the population. In Germany, 0.9% of the population were using NPS. Otherwise, similar drug problem, but on NPS, a very big difference. Once Germany introduced it, the level remained stable. No decline, but at least it remained stable. No more increase, but overall drug use increased in Germany. Yeah? Next. Cannabis. On cannabis, we see a decline in the quantity seized of cannabis, which as such is positive. The problem is again here this does not mean a decline in the cannabis use. We just see the opposite. It's simply because of change in regulations, you see this decline in seizures. Now, we look at cannabis use in Colorado and Washington, where cannabis was first legalized, and you can see there was a clear increase in both Washington and in Colorado. There was also an increase in the United States as such, but the increase was much more pronounced in Washington and in Colorado, where you saw the legalization. What is more problematic, pasture use in the United States increased, the number of pasture users increased over the last decade by 68%, the past month users by 81%, but the daily users by 124%. So it's really daily users who use it every year, every day. This has shown the biggest increase. But there are some good news. The good news is there had been expectations that once you're going to legalize cannabis, the young people will massively go into cannabis and use it. Fortunately, this has not materialized. What we see is actually a decline in cannabis use, both in Colorado as well as in the United States over the last couple of years. So this was in contrast to the overall trend. Cannabis use among youth actually has declined. Okay, of course, for youth, it has not been legalized. Legalization only starts at the age of 21. So where it has not been legalized, but it's interesting, there was no spillover from the general population to the youth population. So this was a very positive trend. On the other hand, emergency room visits, a clear increase. Hospitalizations, a clear increase. In terms of the age groups, we see the increase among the 18 to 24, the 26 to 34, the 35 to 64. Not among the young, 9 to 17, it was rather stable. However, in terms of hospitalizations, all age groups increased. And this, again, a phenomenon we don't completely understand, the difference between emergency department visits and hospitalizations. Hospitalizations increase across all age groups. Public safety outcomes, in parallel to the legalization of cannabis, the persons who died under the influence of cannabis from a car accident has clearly increased. It used to be around 6% in 2006, and it's around 18% in 2018 in Colorado. We see also an increase in property crime and violent crimes in Colorado. So the idea that once you legalize cannabis, crime will decline. Unfortunately, this did not materialize. In the same way, we see the Washington, both property crime and crimes against persons increased after legalization. Not saying because of legalizations, but there was clearly no positive outcome in terms of an overall decline in criminality. But what you also see around the illegal market for cannabis continues. Here we have the data for Canada. And in Canada, it says that still around 40% of the cannabis users get the cannabis from the illegal sources. The positive sign, it used to be more than 50%. Only in 2018, in 2019, it already fell to around 40%. But still 40% is a lot. And why? Because cannabis on the illegal market is still cheaper than on the legal market. So it's quite logical that people, when they have an opportunity, want to go for the cheaper cannabis. The cheaper market is the illegal one. And they, as I said before, around 40% get the cannabis from this market. Now, the darknet. Darknet, we have a long-term upward trend. We see a short life span of darknet markets. But we also see a temporary loss of confidence, which has occurred. But now everything has changed again with the COVID crisis. During the COVID crisis, the darknet has become very attractive again, and particularly retail trafficking via the darknet has increased. Now, in more detail, you see here the lifespan on average of a market has been just 8 months. And most of the markets who were active in 2019 were only started in 2018. So it's really a phenomenon very strongly in flux. In terms of the new users on the darknet, what we see, people who never used drugs before, around 4% started using the darknet to purchase drugs in 2015. But by 2020, it was already 9%. So there is a growing proportion of people who never used drugs before. But once they discover the darknet, they get the drugs via the darknet and they use it to get drugs. So this is something definitely to watch out. The second thing what we are seeing is that the darknet remains a young phenomenon. So a third of the people who use the darknet for purchasing drugs just started doing this in last year. We have around 50% doing it in the last 2 years and two-thirds doing it in the last 3 years. So there are not many people who used for a long time the darknet. It's just very recently that most people have started to use the darknet.
That was Dr. Thomas Peachman with the UN Office on Drugs and Crime speaking about the UN's 2020 World Drug Report. He was part of a webinar hosted recently by the Vienna Non-Governmental Organizing Committee, or VINGOC. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Be sure to check out Dean's video project, Becker's Buds. You can find links at drugtruth.net or search on YouTube for Becker's Buds. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. The Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.